All right, everybody, welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. My name is Josh. We are joined by our friend Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Josh. How are you doing?
Doing good. Mission accomplished, as a great writer once said. Barcelona have officially qualified for the Champions League, so we can stop our worrying, our concern trolling, and now we can basically, there's just no impactful football in Barcelona land till, you know, August, late August, whenever the season picks up again. So there have been two wins since the last time I recorded, one of them a little more impressive than the other. So let's start with the more impressive one, the one over Betis that secured the top four spot. Of course, it was left to a late kind of miracle winner by two aging stars, former stars, however you want to put it. But it was still an impressive win against a pretty good team. What were your kind of takeaways from that match, given how important it was for Xavi's guys?
Good to get that result against the team that you're competing for in the top four and basically knock them out of it, and to do it in on an away game. So that was really encouraging. I still don't think that the performances have been very good, even in that game, but it was nice to see, especially this is one thing I was thinking about that same week where I watched Real Madrid and Manchester City right before that a few days. And it was just, it's so dispiriting to see the way that they come back and win those late games. And they've been doing it for years. It's just a part of their ethos, if that's the right word. And Barcelona hasn't quite been that same team, known for those kind of late game dramatics. So to see them do it against Betis, I thought was, if anything, nice symbolism to show that maybe under Xavi, there's going to be more resiliency than there was in the past. And that was my main takeaway. And it was, anytime you win a late game, it's just exciting as well. So getting results at this point in the season, you know, with all these injuries now, that's created a little bit of space to be able to not panic and get the top four solidified. And even, like Xavi said, set a new goal for getting top two.
I don't really have anything else about this match. What were your thoughts on the way that Barcelona started, particularly the kind of strategy and formation at the start of the Celta match?
I mean, just bizarre, in my opinion. I saw Memphis and Ferran and then like four forwards and two midfielders. And one of the two midfielders was Gavi. And I thought the 4-2-3-1 made sense to me in the beginning, because maybe you could make the case that Memphis could play behind Aubameyang, but then and I guess that's actually what it was, the 4-2-3-1. But then when you saw that, doesn't really make sense, because how can you put Gavi in a double pivot? He's never done that before. Just bizarre. I think that's the thing about Xavi, because he is a young coach. We forget he has a lot of potential. He's very smart, but he's going to do things that are just kind of strange sometimes. And I think maybe we have to be a little bit patient with him so he can learn as a coach. He's done it a few times, actually, in his tenure already, where I pointed out, like, he's not a perfect manager. I think he's been very successful so far. And he's kind of I don't know, given himself leeway to experiment, maybe has crazy ideas in his head. But that didn't work from the beginning. It was actually kind of painful to watch. Let's be honest, Celta was dominating the game up until Dembélé's spectacular first goal, or the one he created for Memphis.
Yeah, and I think the more strange part about it was like his quote after the game. He said, quote, "The team was not comfortable with their formation." Cool, he admits that. But then the strange part is he says, quote, "We have not trained it much and it has not gone well." Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I mean, here's the thing. They qualified for top four, right? Like, I guess you can screw around a little bit. Like, I don't know if that's what his thought process was. Like,
yeah, so then the question is, like, why did you do it then, Xavi? Because you do know you had Ricky Puig, who you could have just slid into that center midfield role and kept your 4-3-3 and system intact. And it just goes to show, if anything, like, what message are you sending to Ricky Puig? That's what stood out to me, because that was so obvious. So why did you do it? You didn't train it. Memphis, everybody knows, you should know better than anyone else, is really not a technical player in the number 10 role. Like, he's going to give up the ball. He did some really good things. That his work rate was really, he's really good. He's working hard these days. So I don't know why he did it. Maybe it was just something that he says, my bad, mea culpa. I'll not do that again. And I hope that's the truth.
Yeah, the Ricky stuff is weird, because I feel like this is like the third straight manager that's been like, no, Ricky's very important to what we're doing here. And then just leaves him on the bench at all times possible and doesn't actually give him any important playing time. Like, there's the old adage about, like, you know, like, the words coming out of your mouth don't really speak that loud when your actions are just benching him every game. And I know he came in, right? He got a chance at halftime after Xavi's plans didn't go so well, but I don't know, with the way that the midfield is shaping up in terms of who's going, and we're going to talk about who's potentially going out later, later on, but like the midfield transition that is set to happen at Barcelona is a little confusing when you have players on the club now that you feel like could be really good players given the chance, and they're just sitting there.
And it's strange because, like, as fans, we've also watched, if we're talking about Ricky Puig first, we've watched him play, and fans are more brutal than anyone else, especially like the true Barca fans. They're not going to give a player the benefit of the doubt if he's not playing well. And what we're all seeing is not what the coaches have seen, the last three Barcelona coaches who haven't given Ricky Puig the chance. Maybe as a coach, you're conservative and you are really worried about like his defensive contributions. But in a Barcelona team where Xavi's philosophy starts with, we want the ball, we desire the ball, we want to have the ball, we want to dominate the ball at all times, I think Ricky Puig is a good player to have in that system. And even when he came on, I'm not saying he was perfect, I think he was rusty, but he's so dynamic, just so creative and kind of fearless and moving the game forward. And maybe that's why fans like him, because it's more attractive football to watch. But it doesn't look like, based on reports, that even he wants to stick around any longer. So there will be a transition in the midfield that Xavi needs to figure out.
Yeah, and let's talk about, again, we're coming up, and it's mid-May already. Ousmane Dembele still doesn't have a new contract. I think it's pretty clear he's the best player at Barcelona right now. I don't know that it's particularly close in terms of his ceiling. I should take that back. Sans Pedri and Fati's ceilings, and okay, that was overzealous.
I think it's fair. I think they're on the same level in terms of, you know, top three right there. Yeah.
I mean, okay, so you know, sans Pedri, I think even including Fati, I think Dembele is clearly the second and maybe the first, but definitely the second or third best player at Barcelona. Still doesn't have a new contract. And from all signs, he's not really been considered a priority. I'm not seeing everyday reports about progress. I'm not seeing anything. When it comes to a world-class player that has a contract running out, you usually see updates, you usually see leaks, rumors. I'm seeing nothing. And it's concerning because the lackluster performances that have happened in the last couple months, right? Like the random sparks they've gotten. Yes, like there's been like a random moment of Memphis greatness or a random moment of Aubameyang doing something. But for the most part, it's chances that Ousmane Dembele is creating. He's the league leader in assists, despite having not played, you know, a dozen plus games or whatever it was. It's kind of mind-boggling why he's not being prioritized, whether it's like a Barcelona media campaign. Like, why are they not leaking? Like, they want him back. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, that's what I heard about this week was mission accomplished for now. And what I meant by that was it felt really good to accomplish that goal of top four. But if someone like Dembele isn't back and he's been the guy you've really relied on for playmaking, then what? Like, how do you replace that? Like Pedri and Fati, they'll be dependent on them, but this is Barcelona. We don't want to be in second place next year. We want to be in first place. And there's no doubt that it's looking like Dembele doesn't need to step up right now to do the contract renewal because he can wait till the summer. So it really has to be Barcelona if they want him making the moves, and they're not making the moves. So Xavi did, you know, a great job these last few months, but whatever he's going to be doing next year, it looks like it's going to have to be a completely new formula, because what he relied on these last few months to accomplish this goal, it's not going to be the same system next year with the same people, unless we get surprised in the summer. But that's what I think all of us are thinking now. And if we're being honest, if Ousmane Dembele has been the spark, and if he wasn't the spark, we would have seen a lot more of Adama Traore. And the reason we haven't seen him is because Dembele has been undroppable. So how do you replace that going forward if you're not going to renew him? Big question.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Dembele, like he bet on himself, and he knew, like, and it's paying off. Like he's had a healthy run of like a few months now. It honestly feels like, and this might not be true, but it feels like it's the longest stretch of time he hasn't been hurt since he's been at the club, or at least the longest stretch of time he hasn't been hurt and been given chances on the pitch. And we're truly seeing like what, I mean, again, this is one of the things, I don't know if the entire fan base felt this way, but it feels like talking to you, talking to every person I have on this podcast for the last 2 years, it's been like, Dembele is great. Give him chances and you will see. And Xavi clearly knew this, mm-hmm. right? He's doing it. He's performing. He bet on himself. And now Barcelona have to pay up or they're going to lose one of the best wingers in the world. And heading into a year next year where I guess it remains to be seen if Real Madrid are getting Mbappe or not. But like this current Real Madrid team that are just never die, mm-hmm. that can casually stroll and win La Liga and casually make the Champions League final and are going to get better in the offseason. And Barcelona might get worse. Like, yeah, I don't
exactly.
It's very strange.
I think what it tells you is, okay, no one's doubting anymore that he's one of the best wingers in the world, Dembele. So you have to pay him like he's one of the best wingers in the world. But what it reveals is this financial situation, which is not transparent. No one's more like consumed with the information than people like us. And none of us really know the ins and outs of how bad the debt is. But it's clear that when you combine this with the Erling Haaland situation, he didn't even get sold to Man City for that much money, all things considered. Barcelona is really in financial trouble. And if they're penny pinching with Dembele, if it's for sporting reasons, you have every right to say, listen, or injury reasons, that's one thing. I look at Real Madrid and I'm thinking, okay, what's going to be important is chemistry between players. And it's very clear that not only is Dembele great, but his teammates recognize that and they're feeding him the ball so much and they're playing off of him. Benzema has Vinny Jr. Their chemistry has been incredible this year. Aubameyang's going to be back next year. He really does need Dembele because the chemistry there is so good. And I think Xavi knows these things. So part of me thinks that behind the scenes, he's going to be, politicking on both sides, on the Barcelona side and on the Dembele side, to make this happen. But there are no certainties.
Wait. I guess for whatever reason, I ignored the Erling Haaland transfer fee. I guess it's including agent fees only going to be 80 million?
Including agent fees, 50 million, even without that.
That's great, because I'm on a nice mirror blog post that's talking about 10 players that cost more than
him. And how much did Ferran Torres cost? About 45, not that far off. And I'm not going to sit here and start bashing him, but if we can afford Ferran Torres, can't you find a way to maybe get Erling Haaland?
I don't know. Here's some good news, right? There used to be 3 Barcelona players on a list like this. Now there's only 2. We've taken Ousmane Dembele off because despite it was market rate at the time. But you know, unfortunately, our good pal Aston Villa's Philippe Coutinho is still on here for 140 million. Although we're set to reportedly gain 20 million from him because Steven Gerrard really loves him. So after five years or whatever it's been since we signed him, anyways, yeah, the financial situation, the lack of clarity, it's confusing. I don't, like you said, the Ferran Torres thing is honestly the most confusing, besides letting Lionel Messi go, because we forget that happened less than a year ago.
Wages.
That is the.
It's all about wages, apparently.
I guess, but like, where do you come up with the 50 million for Ferran Torres if you can't afford? Like,
just read recently that they said apparently the deal was they're going to pay 10 million for 5 years with Man City. So they're
that's great. So they're taking out loan. They're taking out installment plans against the oil barons of the Premier League. Cool. Okay.
That's how they afforded him, apparently. But still, that's still debt over like 5 years, whether you pay it now or pay it later.
I do think it's funny that Romelu Lukaku is on this list twice for 90 million to Chelsea and 70 million to Manchester United. Poor Rom.
It's supposed to show you have to bring in the players for your system. You can't just say, oh, that guy's really good, and then bring him in. And
Just send him back to Inter. Watching him in Lautaro was the best.
Now this whole Griezmann situation is have you been following that this last week? I mean, now we're just like waxing everything that's going on. But apparently, so Aston Villa, first of all, have already negotiated down the price they're going to pay Barcelona for Coutinho. Barcelona wanted 40, and they're like, we'll take him for 20. Barcelona's like, we'll take anything, give us 20. And now with Griezmann, it's the same thing. Like Atletico's like, we don't know if we really want him and his wages, if it's really worth buying him. So in order for us to actually do it, they're going to have to get like a real cut rate deal. And Barcelona is going to get very little in return. And it's all because of the wage bill. They want to get Griezmann's wages off the wage bill. And
for some reason, I thought the buy price was like written in the deal when he left.
But it's not a guaranteed buy. Like they don't have to pay it. And for Coutinho, I guess, I don't know how that works exactly with how they're written into the contract, but you can always negotiate it down later and refuse to pay what was originally put into that, into the loan deal.
Oh gosh, I think the craziest thing, Coutinho's only 29 years old.
Yeah, he could be great for Aston Villa. Like, yeah, he's dried up a little bit. When we watch him play with Aston Villa, though, he's in his natural position. That's the other thing. The Barcelona, having Messi around for Griezmann and for Coutinho was really bad. They were never, I think, going to play well with him. But at least with Aston Villa, it's worth the investment because, and he might be great the next few years because he's exactly where he wants to be on the field.
Okay, let's just talk about. Okay, let's see. Let's talk about Nico. So Barcelona reportedly have no idea what to do with him. His contract isn't up for two more years, but there was a sport reporting that Wolves were interested in him. And of course, there seems like there's a report that Wolves and Barcelona are interested in each other's players like every 2 weeks. I guess they just have a nice relationship now. I don't really know. Again, another one of the midfielders that Barcelona have on a deal, who's young, who they aren't sure where they fit. I in what world, why would they ever sell him and not just loan him out, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, it's just that infusion of money. If they'll pay $20 million for him, and
do you think they'd pay 20?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe not, maybe, well, more than 10 for sure. I think given what I've seen in the market for a young player, I don't know if anyone would pay that outright for him, but if you're Barcelona, why would you sell him for less than that when he's got so much potential? And I like Nico because I'm not sure he'll ever be truly spectacular, but he's kind of versatile. He can play all three positions within the midfield, which is good. But maybe I was kind of reading up on Frank Kessié, and I think that situation's interesting with Nico because maybe you could loan him out. I don't think he's at that high of wages. So you're right. Why would you loan him out? Like, what is the actual benefit of that? But maybe they're going to lean on Frank Kessié next year. Well, the more I read about him, 25 years old, he'd be a really interesting player for the future, coming in the prime of his career. But that's what I'm saying. Like, when you hear reports like that, on one hand, Nico's a building block for the future, and then you're talking about either loaning him or selling him. There's something going on with the finances that doesn't square away with the more optimistic tone that Joan Laporta portrays sometimes.
All right, so let's talk about Frenkie de Jong. So you're going to have to tell me, is Gerard Romero, is he like, I don't trust anyone really, except for Fabrizio Romano. Is it Romano? Anyways. Mm-hmm. Gerard Romero, is he a quality reporter? Do you know? Because
I think his claim to fame is just that he says things and then they become true. So now people take him seriously because everything he's been saying the last few years somehow actually becomes a thing.
Okay, never mind. This isn't the guy I thought he was. Okay, never mind. I don't take him that seriously. Okay, well, there goes my whole thing. Anyways, he had a report about Frankie. Apparently, well, I guess this isn't even like, because I've seen Sport talk about this too, I think. But his old boss, of course, is now at Manchester United. And it seems like every time a new powerful Dutch figure comes at any big club, they want Frankie de Jong. It all goes back to money, right? And like, I feel like we've talked about this each time you've been on, where there's been some strange, like, why would they let Frankie go? And now it's just every good Barcelona midfielder is on the chopping block, except for Sergio Busquets, because I guess no one wants him. Frankie de Jong, if they're able to get a decent amount of money for him, it seems like they're going to be happy to let him go. And I don't really understand it, because he's worth that much because he's that good. Do you actually... like, is there a world where you see him leaving? Because at this point, I kind of thought it was ridiculous 2 months ago. And now with, like, the bits of business that I'm seeing them do, I wouldn't be surprised if it was announced in 2 weeks that he was leaving.
No, I think so. Joan Laporta already proved that he'll do a shocking move and sell on Messi and Griezmann. And this could be the shocker of the summer coming up now. And it's going to be, you know, he'll do it and then he'll say, he'll explain and we'll get more information about how the financial situation is really bad. And this is the only way to get a cash infusion to get other players. But for me, I think we're going to miss Frankie de Jong when he's gone. I think he's a player that he hasn't always been up to the really high expectations that we had for him, but he really is a glue on this team. You know, he's all over the pitch. He's a leader. And if you're going to do something like getting rid of Frankie, I don't know who you replace him with. I'm not sure it's as simple to say it's going to be Gavi because he's such a different type of player. And then you really are losing depth in the midfield that needs to be replaced somehow.
It's like a cash infusion for players, right? Like that's what you said. That's like, that's what I think when I see that much money. And I'm just like, who? Like they...
Like Lewandowski? Are you going to like get rid of him and then use that money to overpay for Lewandowski a year before he's going to be a free signing?
It does seem like the Lewandowski stuff, actually, there's actual sparks to this that he actually wants to leave. Like it's kind of gone on a little bit longer. There was a Sport report yesterday, I think, about how he's really sure he wants the new chapter and that he's interested in Barcelona.
But Barca's going to have to pay. And Bayern's not going to, you know. And in a way, it's the way I'm looking at that situation, just like pivoting around now. If you have Aubameyang for one more year and you could get Lewandowski a year later, even though he's going to be older forwards, center forwards seem to still be productive these days. I feel like you have to wait and get him on a free and use Aubameyang next year as a center forward as a first option.
I don't know. All I know is that the Barcelona business that's happening, that's rumored to be happening, that hasn't happened like the last 5 months. And I think we have to give credit where credit's due. And I think like we have talked about this and praised them for this. Like what they did in January saved their season. Like both Xavi arriving and Adama Traore and Aubameyang randomly turning into superstars for like a month and a half saved their season.
Yes.
That was great. Yeah, we have to give them praise for
horrific,
that.
And then all of a sudden those guys came in and changed everything.
Yep. All that being said, I'm very confused at the direction that, and again, there's just rumors at this point, but the rumors have stayed somewhat consistent, like with the Frankie stuff. And so I'm concerned where Barcelona's summer's heading, and only time will tell. But if we head into an offseason where they don't re-sign Dembele, Frankie gets sold, and we end up with who knows what, it's going to be a weird vibe heading into next year, to say the least.
Let's just say a prayer that Leeds gets relegated. And Rafinha comes in cheap because he is a kind of game-changing winger that I think everyone at Barcelona is like, that would just be a godsend. But you're right. It's even if Rafinha came and then Dembélé and Frankie leave, that's a huge part of the core of your team right now that has been successful over the last few months. So there's just no guarantees. I don't see, like, Madrid, the funny thing about them, like, so they, if they are the measuring stick, like, how do we actually compete for the Liga title next year? They weren't even spectacular this year. They were just like winning mindset all the way. And there just wasn't a lot of competition. And under Carlo Ancelotti again next year, they're going to be just a steady team. And if Barcelona is going to compete with Real Madrid next year, they're going to have to be really good and not shoot themselves in the foot the way that they did so many times to start the season this year. And when you're starting over with new guys, once again, there's no guarantees it's going to work out even with Xavi. Is there anything positive that we can think about? Because now they're feeling like, I'm not trying to anxieties that going into the summer, but I mean.
No, I mean, when you have a guy like Ousmane Dembele that's not re-signed at this point, I think there's good reason to have, like, what are they doing? But we're going to end on a positive note.
Okay, let's do it.
Mission accomplished for now. Like, yes. Like you said in your piece, Barcelona have officially qualified for top four Champions League. Like, they're in the Champions League next year, which is all we want. That's kind of all we targeted. That's all we hoped for. And we have it now. So we can look forward to European nights for at least six matches in the group stage and we can hope for more. And, that's a good thing, right? There's going to be money from that. It makes Barcelona attractive and that's a good thing.
That's a really good point. I think Barcelona is an attractive destination again for players. Lewandowski wants to come here. Rafinha wants to come here. This is a place players want to come to. So even with the uncertainty of the other players who might be leaving, a lot of good players want to come here. And ultimately, my positive note to end on is that Pedri and Ansu Fati are going to be leading the way. And that's something to look forward to see what they can do together next year.
Yes. And Ousmane Dembele. Please re-sign Ousmane Dembele. Anyways.
Yes, and hopefully Dembele. Yeah.
Nick, thank you for joining us. Everyone check out Nick's great work at BarcaBlaugranas.com. And Nick, we will chat again soon.
Sounds good. Have a good one. We'll